8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. On the phone now to give us a rundown of some of the ongoing development projects in Summit County is Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Leslie.
Hey, first, let's just start off with what's happening with that Blue Ribbon Committee that was going to help plan Kimball Junction.
We are going to be going to the County Council this coming Wednesday, the 19th. Council's actually going to move forward and make appointments to people who are going to be on that committee. Once the appointments are made, shortly thereafter, we'll be starting gathering that group of individuals up and start moving forward with this planning exercise. The goal here is to try and have some recommendations, some findings and recommendations to the council by late summer, early fall.
All right. So this group apparently has been meeting for some time. We're just formalizing it at this point?
Well, I don't know if it's accurate to say that the group has been meeting. Really, what we've done is got together a couple of the, some of the major property owners within the district there to begin to explore the idea. Are they interested in participating in this? You know, there's been a lot of things going on in Kimball Junction here in the last year or two. You know, we've got transit improvements with the transit center. We've got Whole Foods that is being developed. There's been a lot of discussion amongst some of the property owners about wayfinding. You know, we've had Blue Ribbon committees on parking, Skull Candies getting ready to open. And I think all of those things combined together from staff's perspectives, you know, led us to at least suggest maybe we need to step back at a little bit higher level with all the property owners, you know, those stakeholders, including some members of the community and the residents within the area, and see if we can develop a broader strategy for the neighborhood. And so unless we had buy-in from some of those key players, we were worried that we weren't going to be able to get the idea off the ground. And so I think that there was general support for that. Once we had that, we took it to council to see if they were willing to let us engage in that. And council, I believe, was pretty supportive of that. So I think we're going to get it started here really soon.
All right. So when we talk about the property owners, are we talking about whom? The Boyer Tech Park owners and whom else?
So I would consider the major property owners within the area or representatives of that. So it's going to be the Utah Olympic Park. It's going to be Redstone. It's going to be Boyer. We're looking to reach out for the High Plains folks. Those are the people at Walmart, Tanger, the village at Kimball Junction. Now, there's a number of smaller individually owned pieces of property in there. We're hopefully going to be able to get representation from them as well. So included in that committee, and that's part of what the last couple weeks we've been doing, is accepting applications for community members at large and residents who live within the district who are interested in participating in this to have a chance to get involved.
All right. So recently we have heard from county officials, you know, saying that our property tax revenues have flattened out. And then you look around and you hear about all of these development projects and you see things going up. So what is it? Are we flat or are we growing?
I'll leave the flat versus growing to the folks who analyze the number. I can't tell you what's moving forward here as we head into the building season. There's a lot going to be under construction, particularly in the canyons. In the canyons, we have right now sort of three projects getting ready to get underway or getting ready to get underway. We have the Apex project, which is up by the resort center. That's 63 townhouse condominium units. Nearby on RC-25 is the Lift project. That's 61 units. It's likely that a project in the Frostwood area will be finished up this year. That's the Frostwood townhome, so that's 26 units. So that, in and of itself, that's a fair amount of activity in the canyons area. Keep in mind, we're now going to be moving forward with the public hearings for the canyons master plan. It's likely when that's all said and done that we'll see additional requests moving forward for the canyons area. And I think, you know, from the planning department's perspective, this is what we've anticipated or we predicted happening a couple of years ago. So we're getting busy there. In the Quarry Village area near Pine Brook, I know people are seeing some construction going on near the old quarry. That's a project ironically named Quarry Village. That's 68 units being built there. That project goes back a number of years to the mid-2000s when it was approved. It's now just coming out of the ground here years later. Obviously, Silver Creek Village is probably... people are going to see some activity out there this year, a lot of infrastructure probably going into the ground. I think I'm safe to say that, you know, one of the first phases of development might include the development of some of the affordable housing out in that area. So we're very interested in that. Obviously, Whole Foods will be finished here this summer.
And we should note that the Silver Creek Village, we're talking 1,300 residential units here. I mean, that's bigger than the city of Colville.
Yeah, it's bigger than the city of Colville. That's that build out. Will that happen all at once? Probably not. Will it be, you know, dependent on the market? Certainly will be. But when people see Traco starting to run out at the intersection of 40 and 80, that's what that one's about. And I'm just going to add to the list here, albeit it's not exactly in, you know, the Snyderville Basin, but very nearby in the Wanship area, Blue Sky. Blue Sky is moving forward with the development of their hotel, the Sky Hotel. That's a project. It's not visible from the highway corridor, but it's a significant project helping to anchor that development out there. It's a hotel that's about 64,000 square feet. It's going to be a main lodge building. I believe the number of rooms in the hotel building, the lodge itself, is around 25-30 rooms or suites. And then surrounded in the canyon near the main lodge will be roughly a dozen, 12 to 14 detached sort of cottages, casitas. So that's going to be under construction. We just issued the building permit on that within the last week. So, yeah, there's a lot of development slated for this year.
All right. So the listener out there who is accusing me of the promoting the fake news of growth and development, that does not sound like no growth and development to me.
No, you're a reputable journalist, Leslie. You are not spreading fake news. There's going to be a lot going on this year.
Let's get an update on the status of the Colby School building. Of course, we had reported earlier that it was being used as a boarding house of sorts. What is the status at this point?
So the status of the building as of the first of the month. The people, the seasonal workers who were in there have left. The folks who are operating that, you know, complied with the fire district orders to have that vacated on time, which they did. The fire district received a call previously that there were a number of people living in the building, so. The fire district went out. We had a county building inspector go out there, and I think at that time they identified about approximately 30 people, workers living there. Allegedly, there were more, upwards to 50. There were concerns at that time regarding the fire sprinklers and the smoke detectors. Were they working? Were they sufficient? Those issues, I believe, have been resolved, but the key thing was trying to come up with a time frame and an approach to have the building vacated, get those people out of there, but do so sensitively, so we weren't kicking resort workers out onto the street, you know, with no place to go. So it was a delicate balancing act trying to do that. But again, we have compliance out there right now. I don't believe that the building's being occupied for any uses, to my knowledge. We do have a pending application for the redevelopment of that. We had that originally scheduled for a public hearing coming up in a little over a week and a half on the 25th, but I was informed late yesterday afternoon that at the request of the applicants, they've pulled from that agenda. We don't have a meeting date into the future, specifically when that will be. I'll be looking more into that later on today. Not sure the specifics why the request to pull was made, but just for the benefit of the neighborhood who might be listening to us here, there will not be a meeting on the 25th.
All right. And the redevelopment plans called for, I believe, some additional buildings, some cabins, if you will, as well as a restaurant, and then the redevelopment of the school itself?
Yeah. There would be proposed additional lodging rooms, suites onto the existing building. There was a proposal for, you know, a restaurant to be incorporated as part of that. As part of the restaurant would be a bar. There would be a repurposing of some of the other structures that currently exist on the project. Where we last left off with the Planning Commission was a punch list of questions that go back to the original entitlements. What was originally entitled? What was the property configuration at that point in time? I know Dave Thomas has been working on a revised set of answers to those and some opinions. And those have gone back and forth with the attorneys that have been involved at this point in time. I'm thinking maybe that may be part of the reason for the request for the extension of the request to be coming off the 25th agenda. But again, I'm not really certain. I'll be looking into that. So no meeting on Colby School on April 25th.
All right. Finally, just wanted to ask you about the plans, my understanding, to put a 550-space park and ride along Interstate 80 there. And I'm thinking this is what we know as the view area near Echo Hill Middle School?
Yeah. So this is what I know about that. I believe that this was a site that the Blue Ribbon Parking Committee had been looking as a potential of one of the many sites around the area that could be developed. The county's been looking at this idea for a number of years at this point. I think where we are is there are negotiations and discussions. County staff is working with UDOT to secure the use of the property. At this point in time, it's undetermined whether that would be just some sort of long-term lease by UDOT, whether there's any discussions about acquisition or change. I just don't know the specifics on that, but Public Works and Engineering, I know, currently are meeting with the folks down at the state to discuss how the property under which terms the property could get used. What that facility would be is currently in design, but again, it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg. It's going to depend on the terms under which we get to use it by UDOT. Could range anywhere from on the low end to 100 spaces to the upper end around 500 or more. It's a complicated design exercise because there's a lot of factors involved in that. The access to that, would it initially start off as phase one using the existing access off the interstate at Jeremy and Pinebrook or Kimball Junction? Would there be a slip ramp? Ultimately, would there be a more sophisticated interchange there? I think those are all part of the discussion that's going on with Derek Radke and Gary Horton and their conversations with the state. You know, some of the things that I've heard that would be included in this is some messaging that would help utilize the property maybe a bit more efficiently. You know, they call it visual messaging systems. It's more of an up to the minute reader board way of displaying information, that there's X amount of spaces available, you know, use this particular exit. So it's a big project. It ultimately will go through, you know, some formal review. If it's on UDOT property, it's sort of an interesting situation. It's outside of the county's jurisdiction, so it's not really zoned. My sense is as though, like anything else like this, you know, we would be taking it through for comment with the Planning Commission and certainly the council. Undoubtedly, the council will have a chance to review that. So we'll do our best to kind of keep everybody informed as this goes along, but really sort of that first step that needs to be taken and finalized is exactly how and under what terms we get to use this by the state.
Okay. Pat, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Joining me now in the studios, Park City Council Member Tim Henney. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Summit County announced that they've got a new mental health and substance abuse coordinator, Aaron Newman. He introduced himself and said that the council would be hearing a lot more from him in the future. He had mentioned that there are several areas where we are truly missing the mark. So how is Park City going to assist with all of this?
Well, I think we're part of the, you know, regional community, so we have a role in assisting with his position. And I know that we committed to a certain amount of funding. It wasn't a great deal, but you know, a little bit to kind of get things rolling. Now that he's been hired, and Summit County Health Services and Rich Bullough, you know, he's reporting to him. He's within the Summit County umbrella, and you know, we're looking forward to working with him. So we're open to working and appreciative of his being on board, and we'll look for, you know, opportunities. If there's a request to fund, we'll be, you know, giving that due consideration.
All right. You also heard from Cheryl Rodman with Park City Plastic Coalition, asking for the council to take a lead on a plastic bag ban in Park City.
Yep. Sherelle's been to us twice. She came a couple, 3 weeks ago, and she brought Mary Clouser from Recycle Utah. And, you know, it's something that bubbles up and kind of cycles through our community every 2, 3, maybe 4 years. And it's kind of constantly there percolating at a lower level, but it does come to the surface. And Sherelle has brought it to the surface and has formed a group, a coalition that's interested in pushing this initiative. And they're getting some traction. You know, in the past, we've talked about how we didn't want to be the lead on this, on the bleeding edge, because it put a big target on our back with the state legislature. And we knew that we would be in a legal battle because the lobbyists and the bag manufacturers would file suit. And we also know that there's precedent for communities winning those suits, but we were looking for assistance in helping to offset those legal costs and fight it as a group instead of a single community being ourselves. And that is shifting a little bit. We're now thinking that it might be time to kind of step in there and take the gloves off and just see what happens.
All right, target's there anyway.
Yeah, that's part of the thinking, is it doesn't seem to do us a heck of a lot of good to try not to put a target on our back. We have one. And then Luke Carton got up and said that he's, you know, from the city's position and the sustainability department, he's going to bring some options to us and do some research. So that's the next step, and that next step is happening. So Sherelle has been successful in getting us to take that next step, and Luke addressed that last night.
And I think he mentioned some 230 communities in the U.S. already banning plastic.
Right.
Bags. So it's not like we're the only one.
That's the precedent, yeah.
All right. You also heard from Historic Park City Alliance Director Michael Burrill, basically saying that his organization supports what the council is doing with regard to the storefront amendments. You heard Angela Mosqueda and Sarah Berry with Future Park City had started a petition like an hour before council meeting, 84 signatures already supporting the changes. So how do you feel about those changes, which would limit the storefronts to what, I think, 50 feet?
Yeah, it's 50 feet. And, you know, the idea is to continue to protect the rhythm and scale is the way that the planning department presents it. And that's critical. You know, we want to protect the rhythm and scale of Main Street, but we also want to try to encourage or nurture or create an opportunity for our local merchants. And so that's a little deeper, and that's a little more difficult to address because the free market forces that we're facing, not only throughout the broader community, but they get really acute on Main Street when you see the rents that people are able to get now in the free market. And that pushes our local merchants who have been here in some cases for over 20 and 30 years out. They just can't afford those free market prices the way that a formula store can. So it's got a couple of aspects to it. I agree with it. I think it's a great first step. That was the consensus view on council. We've had a little bit of, you know, an opposite argument presented from some people in the real estate industry primarily who are saying, look, you can't do anything about these free market forces. They're too overwhelming, and you just have to admit the reality of the situation. Our planning department wants to take a crack at it. Our economic development department wants to take a crack at it. We've been asked, even by landlords and merchants on the street, to take a crack at it. So we think this is a good first step. We think that there are probably additional, more aggressive measures that we may find are practical, but we want to take this step and assess from there. So it's a process.
Yeah. I believe it, you've heard from restaurateur Bill White basically asking the council to hold off on doing this until he can try and explain what he's trying, because he wants to expand, and that would take him larger than
he's got a 50-foot traditional frontage, which is where Grappa is currently located. And then when you make the turn on the top of Main, you make that elbow to the right to head toward Daly. He also owns a triangular piece along there, and he's always felt that that was where he would expand his Grappa operation. So if we were to pass this particular ordinance, he could expand in there, but he would have to call it something else. It could be, to use an example, like River Horse has provisions at the top of Main Street. He could call it Grappa Provisions, and he could offer things that, you know, complement the restaurant but aren't necessarily the expansion of the restaurant. That's what this would allow for. Now, our planning department is working with Bill White to see if there's some way that we can address his concerns as well as the concerns of, you know, the issues that we're trying to deal with the ordinance and not hinder him in a way, because, you know, we're not trying to put restrictions on a business like Bill White and like Grappa that have been part of this community. That's not the goal. The goal is to continue to foster businesses like Bill White. So we don't want to have unintended consequences, and we're working through that. And they asked for additional time to continue that process, and they seem to have made a lot of progress just recently.
Yeah, so I don't have a lot of details on this, but Council Member Andy Bierman had mentioned that Old Town, we have, what, a 12% at chain stores? And he wanted to come up with some kind of formula that would trigger some action for the council to take?
Or? Those are those next more aggressive steps. So if we did have a metric or a trigger at a certain level, a certain threshold that we hit, then we would take the next step, which would, you know, be effectively some form of moratorium on additional chain stores or formula stores. And even how you define them, the terms are really tricky. You know, we're calling them formula stores because what's the definition of a chain store? But then you can also argue what's the definition of a formula store. We have local businesses here. Jan's was used as the example that has, I think, 12 outlets throughout our community. Now, is that a formula store? Nobody in this community, I don't think, would consider Jan's a formula store. So you have to be real careful on, again, those unintended consequences.
All right. The agreement with the USSA and the PC Mark, we've been doing this since 1997. So why is this a good thing? I mean, we're losing the income of 100 annual passes, or maybe not. They wouldn't maybe perhaps get them since they wouldn't be free, but what's the benefit?
Well, we do a lot of things in this community that we look at the benefit to the greater collective, and this is one of those. You know, we think that there's a benefit to being – this ties into our Olympic legacy. As you just pointed out, we've been doing it since 97. It doesn't seem to have an impact on the way that classes can operate. There is a provision in there if somebody with one of these passes comes to a class that's full, that they don't get in, or they have to pay the drop-in fee, or they have to give up their spot brought to somebody who actually is a paying customer. So there's a lot of protections in that way, and we don't seem to hit that. You know, it doesn't seem to be an issue from, you know, are we at capacity and is it being used and are people being bumped? We haven't heard anything like that. So I would just frame it from the standpoint that in this town we do a lot of things for the greater collective that we subsidize in one form or another, and this is just one of those. We get to use the title as a USSA partner, and that has some benefit, and it does tie into, you know, what we are here. It's part of our culture. We have tons of Olympians, and we had the Olympics, and this is just one aspect of that.
Some people scratching their heads, though, I'm saying, why do they come to the MARC? They've got a multi-million-dollar center of excellence to work out at.
And I think it's kind of cool that they come to the MARC and they mingle with the community. And, you know, there's certain things that the center of excellence can do for them. And I guess, you know, when they don't want to have that sort of intense workout, they can come to the MARC. And maybe there's some component of just being part of the community that is attractive to them. And I think that's part of it, too. You know, they do functions with the community. There's one that I've participated in, which is the Tiny Try, and Jillian Votley shows up for that and kind of runs and emcees the whole thing. And I think there's a whole series of events that they do and make themselves, these other people, but our Olympians within our community come and do things with the rest of the community that doesn't happen in other places, and that's part of this agreement as well.
Some good news from Wasatch County this week that they'll be contributing $25,000. There are some strings attached, at least as based on some of the discussion after the motion there. They talked about snowmobile and ATV use and even hunting. And so what are we going to have some answers to what how that property is used in the future?
I think we're trying to sidestep those answers and getting too detailed on them right now, because as you point out, you know, people are or this particular example has strings attached, and I don't think we want strings attached. So by saying, you know, we'll deal with the strings later, but is your commitment good, kind of puts anybody who is making a contribution in the position of having to examine the strings that they're trying to attach. We don't want strings. And quite honestly, you put a conservation easement on a piece of property or you buy it with open space monies, and you look at our examples throughout this community. It's not just in Park City, but in Summit County, and it's on the east side of the county, and anywhere you look, there are significant restrictions, and some of these strings are going to be in conflict with those sorts of restrictions. So we're trying to delay that conversation, and we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I mean, what we're hearing is kind of, this is really to push back that discussion of mitigating the traffic on Marsac Avenue, given the, 450 lots in Brighton Estates.
There's 360 or so in Brighton Estates. I think 40 of them have year-round residents right now. It was never really intended as year-round, but I think it's terrific that people have figured out ways to make that work. But, you know, that's a tremendous impact, because the majority of that traffic would come down the Marsac. So there's Brighton Estates right there, and those are platted lots. And then you have the 260 home sites that were part of the Bonanza Flat itself, kind of pre-approval. These were caps that were put on, plus a ski resort, a private ski resort, plus all the service that would occur with people going up for the things that we see with the second homes, the maintenance and the heated driveways and the heat tape and the property managers and the constant flow of traffic. And you put all of that on our Marsac Road and our roundabout down here, and you've got a catastrophic disaster on your hands. So, yes, we're doing this to address that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then also Wasatch County Council members mentioned that they should be keeping all of the water rights associated with this property. Does the $38 million that we're buying this for include water rights, or is it just property?
Water rights has not been much of a conversation. I don't know what water rights even exist up there. That has not been part of the conversation, as far as my recollection. I don't recall that.
All right. Tim, anything else you want to mention?
Well, you know, we're doing great things with public engagement. It's been something that's near and dear to my heart. And I think Linda Jaeger and her department are really making great success. We heard about those successes last night. But I just point out to the community, on April 25th, we'll have our next outreach with council. It's at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's a coffee with council. I don't know the location. It's on the website. And we also have a newsletter that goes out that I think has something like 1,500. 100 subscribers right now. I would advise anybody in the community to log on and subscribe to that. We also have a council recap that comes out a few days after each council meeting. It's concise, it's clear, it's short, it's phenomenal, and we have wonderful three-minute videos, and we're going to be continuing to do that. We'll also be doing more outreach into neighborhoods and going to specific neighborhoods and having events in people's backyards. You have a great backyard, Leslie, for that kind of thing. You have a lot of gatherings in your backyard, so maybe we could do one
July
of those.
25th, I think, is the date. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just kudos to that department, and it seems to be really well received. And I think, that's very important to legitimizing the process of our local government, and I think we're seeing good success there.
All right, Tim, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Joining me now on the phone, I have Park City Museum Director Sandra Morrison. Good morning, Sandra. Hello, good morning, Sandra. Are you here?
I'm here.
Okay, I can hear you now. Thank you. Yeah. So you've got a free Locals Day coming up on Monday. Tell us about that.
Yes, this Monday. So we're doing a free Locals Day, and it's generously made possible by the support of Stephen and Karen Roney. And the museum will be open from 10 in the morning until 7 p.m. at night, and admission is free. So come on in. If you have never been to the museum, come on by. If you're interested in our newest traveling exhibition, you'll get to be able to see that as well. And that exhibition is called Spirited, Prohibition in America. And, of course, this year marks the 100-year anniversary where Utah went dry. We went dry 3 years before the rest of the United States. And the exhibit basically explores, the events leading up to it. Why did we choose to change the Constitution and prohibit the sale and manufacture and transportation of alcohol? And then also, what happened, which I think we're all pretty familiar with, and then actually, how we, removed an amendment from the Constitution, which is the only time that's ever happened. So it's a pretty fascinating story.
All right. So this remains on exhibit through when?
Until May 25th.
All right.
So we have it for the next month, yeah.
Oh, okay. Where is it from?
And so this is sponsored by the National Endowment for the Humanities and in partnership with the Constitution Center, which is in Philadelphia. There, the Constitution Center has created a larger exhibition, and from that, they partnered with the National Endowment for Humanities to create a much smaller traveling version because they realized a lot of people are never going to make it to Philadelphia and they would never get to see this exhibit. So now it's traveling across the country.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, it's coming to Park City.
So how many Locals Days do you do a year?
That's a good question. I think we do about eight a year. We can't really do them in our busiest seasons just because the staff wouldn't be able to keep up with the capacity of people coming in the door. But we do love to do them when we're slower. So we'll be doing them April, May, June, and then we'll start doing them again in September, October, November, December. Yeah.
Right. And I call them Locals Day. I'm not sure that you require ID or anything, or do you?
No. Yeah. No, we keep it simple. We just want everybody to come in and enjoy the museum. There's a lot of people, that have never been, even though we've actually been open for 8 years now. So, and of course, we always have interesting traveling exhibitions. So it's lovely for people to come in and explore, more national topics, but that do have relevance to Park City as well. And, Prohibition is a great story because, of course, we were dry from 1917, and of course that led to people driving to Wyoming to get alcohol because it was still legal to buy it up there, which is kind of what happens today too. So,
yeah. So how's the new building, the storage and education center in Prospector, going?
So under construction, we have a roof on. The plumbers and the electricians are hard at work. We anticipate the construction being done sometime in June. And then, of course, we have a lot of work because the biggest part of this project is bringing all our collections, all our archives, objects, antiques that are housed in multiple different locations, bringing them for the first time under one roof. So that'll take us a number of months to get that to get the building up and the stable, and then to move the collection on site.
Yeah, you expect to open that up to the public when?
Fingers crossed before next Christmas, but, you know, we've given ourselves until next spring.
Okay.
Another year, yeah. Just, and, you know, because things always take longer than you anticipate.
Absolutely do. Okay. Anything else, Sandra?
No. So we'll have some other programs coming up with this traveling exhibition. We've got a lecture on May the 4th. But we'll have all that up on our website and be promoting that. And, you know, do check us out at parkcityhistory.org or call the museum or come on by.
All right. Hey, thanks for your time.